This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to the Casting Across Fly Fishing Podcast. I'm Matthew of castingacross.com, where I explore the quarry and culture of fly fishing. This 279th episode is about the next steps in fly fishing. What does that mean? Why are we talking about it? Well, if you've just tuned in the last few weeks or months, you know that we've been talking about the necessary and introductory aspects of fly fishing. After 270 plus episodes, I slowed things down, went back to the basics and fundamentals, and produced some content that is directly geared towards those who are interested in fly fishing and those who have just started in fly fishing and those who are wanting to talk about fly fishing to people who are in those situations. And so although this is the last of this initial run of what I've been calling my Cast One series, it's not going to be the end. I'll revisit this from time to time in the future. But this is a important thing to talk about, which is what are the next steps? Because that has ultimately been the goal of Casting Across from day one, especially the podcast. A 20 to 25 minute short form podcast is not going to give you the quantity or, to be honest, the quality of information that you're going to need to do everything that you want to do out on the water or in anticipation of getting out on the water. What I've always intended to do with Casting Across is give you a launch pad, give you a place where you can start and then go into some very good other directions, give you some resources, give you some ideas, and even just give you that frame of mind to move on to the next thing. And so although I've covered the basics at a very brisk pace, at a very 1,000-foot view perspective, today I wanted to give you what I consider to be the next best steps to go and continue to pursue fly fishing. And here's the thing. If you are a brand new angler, or if you've been fishing for a dozen years, I would say these things are the exact same advice. This is the next steps if you've been fishing for your whole life, and these are the next steps if you've only been fishing for a couple of weeks, or these are the next steps that you should take if you haven't even ever been fly fishing. So the first one is actually the most cost intensive, but I think it is one of the best things that you can do. And hear me out, let me explain it, and before you weigh in with an accusation, which I have to say is an appropriate thing, and I'll talk more about that at the end of the podcast. So the very first thing that you can do for the next step of your fly fishing is hire a guide. Go on a guided trip. You might say, that's, if I look at my local guide, my local river, that's like $600 or $700 or $800. I get it. It's a lot of money, but there's a couple of reasons why I would consider this to be the best way to get the most out of your next step. One, it's fun. It is absolutely fun to get out and get into water and get into fish that you didn't even know existed. This is one of the greatest benefits of using a guide. They spend all their time out on the water, fishing themselves and showing other people how to fish. And so they are going to peel back layers of fly fishing, of reading the water, of casting, of fly selection, of understanding the drift, of little aspects of technique and input about things like weather and conditions that would take you months, if not years, to even begin to understand. Does that mean every fly fisher is the top echelon of fly fisher? Every guide is the top echelon of fly fishing? No. But most well-reviewed, well-regarded guides are going to put you on fish and put you on water that you are completely unawares of. Now, is that worth $500, $600, $700? It might not be to you, but if that is something that you're able to afford, if you have a vacation coming up, if you have a birthday coming up, if you have a Father's Day or graduation coming up, this is a great way to spend that time and spend that money. So that's the first thing. You're getting that just exposure. Secondly, you're going to be catching fish. Now, is that a guarantee? You know, some places guarantee that you can catch fish, but it isn't necessarily going to happen. But I have had very few guided trips where it has been a bust from a catching fish standpoint. I think there's only one guided trip I ever went on where I caught only one fish. And it was a bass fishing trip. I think it was in Missouri. And the guy was just apologizing the whole time. We finally got into bass. He had to go to his like absolute last resort technique. And we were able to get into some fish. But that's the only time that I can remember in many, many, many guided trips, both fly fishing and conventional freshwater and salt, that we didn't really get into fish. I did go on a tuna fishing trip once and I didn't catch any tuna, but I caught some other fish. So you're probably gonna get into fish. That's the second thing. So one, exposure, two, getting into fish, and three, you can learn. This is something that separates the good guides from the guides. This is something that separates the guides that are worth that high price tag from the guides that are maybe not worth it, especially if you're not gonna be into a lot of fish. Guides are usually able to explain what to do and not just show you what to do. They're able to explain it so that you can do it. You're going to be able to walk away from that trip understanding a new casting technique, understanding how to mend, understand why you chose this fly over that fly, understand why you were fishing that water that seemed really skinny and really shallow and like it wasn't a great place to fish as opposed to that deep pool. Why did he go there as opposed to there? That's the kind of thing that they're not going to do for you and do with you, but they can explain if you ask questions, and they're not going to get frustrated if you ask questions. They're not going to get frustrated if you ask them to explain it a little bit better for you to understand it. That is something you're going to get from a guide. So effectively, you know, you are spending a lot of money to do this. I make no bones about that. But in the grand scheme of things, you know, it's the same as getting a new set of tires. It's the same as, you know, filling up your, if you live up here in the Northeast, filling up your oil tank with oil. So it is a lot of money, but what you get out of it is like a crash course in fly fishing. You get a personally cultivated, you know, fly fishing experience, and you're going to be catching fish. So again, I can appreciate for somebody who's just getting started in it, you know, that's a lot of money. But at the same time, if you're just getting started in it and maybe you haven't invested a lot of money in gear, you haven't invested a lot of money in licensing and time and things like that, you're going to be able to knock all that out in one day and say, you know what, I really enjoyed this. And even if this is a little bit of an artificial experience, because you're not going to have your own drift boat, you're not going to have access to these rivers, you're not going to have all this information, you're not going to have all the gear that they have, you know, this is something that I can at least look forward to. So although my next experiences aren't going to be as dynamic as what I just had with this guide, I know that these kind of days, the kind of days I can potentially look forward to as I hone my skills, as I spend more time on the water, and as I continue fishing. So that's my first kind of recommendation, the next step. It's a big one, but it's one that you probably aren't going to look back on and say, oh, that was a complete waste of time or money. As long as you're looking at it from all of those perspectives, you're going to get casting instruction, you're going to get on river fly fishing instruction, and you're going to be getting into fish. And it's just a good experience if you haven't done it before. That's the first next step I would recommend. The second next step I would recommend is get hooked up with a community of anglers. So I talked about this last week when I talked about fly fishing culture. Get hooked up with a community of anglers. This does not mean that you need to kind of have whatever the Tinder equivalent of fly fishing buddies is. That's not what I'm recommending. What I'm saying is that try to find other people. Now, this can be in all sorts of different ways. It could be through Trout Unlimited. It could be through a fly tying club. It could be at the local fly shop. It could even be, and I know I've been a little bit disparaging about this, but it could even be through some sort of online community. There are some that are less than helpful and incredibly artificial, and there's some that people have really benefited from. it has been years, I would even say decade plus, since I've been an active participant in like a online conversation message board kind of thing. Really once social media came along, I stopped doing it for whatever reason. But I know people that really benefit from that, gaining information. I know from time to time, I will hop in on those conversations, not to participate, but to kind of lurk and see what's going on with a particular stream or a particular conservation issue or a particular, you know, disaster remediation, because the boots on the ground angler's perspective, although it's quite subjective, is a lot more up to date than the media cycle. There's a stream that I used to fish that had a big fish kill, and the media reported that there was a fish kill, but they didn't report much on those next weeks and months of disaster cleanup. I anticipate potentially one day when everything's great, they'll have some sort of piece on it, but I'm having to go online to these message boards to get the updates on what's happening to prevent this from happening again, what's happening to fix some of these problems, how are the fish coming back, what are people seeing on the water with the bugs and stuff like that. So there are benefits to it from that perspective, but there's also benefits to it from just getting that information, especially when you move from your computer screen to in person. And it kind of has that culture of fly fishing aspects to it, again, like I talked about last week, where you're able to do other stuff other than just fly fish. You're able to kind of find people that live in your same circles and spheres, which is really helpful for integrating fly fishing into what you do. To have that conversation about fly fishing as you're standing on the sideline watching your kids play soccer, to be able to, you know, grab coffee or drink with somebody and talk about fly fishing and talk about other stuff as well. But it'll also open up opportunities for you, not in the sense of you're taking advantage of people, but in, you know, they're going to say, hey, have you tried fishing here? We have a bunch of us are going out to fish here. Would you want to come along? That gives you more exposure to the opportunities that are available around you. Similarly, fly tying, you know, if this is something that you want to integrate into your fly fishing, which you certainly don't have to, but also you don't it doesn't have to be a 100% all in, 100%, not involved at all. You can do a little bit of fly tying. That's completely fine. That's one of the topics I haven't covered really in the Cast One series. That'll be saved for an upcoming episode sometime in the next months. Basically why tie flies and how to get started in it. But you don't have to be a fly tier who's going to be tying every pattern that's in your box to be involved in fly tying. You could tie the most simple patterns and just be sitting around the table with a couple of people at the local fly shop, at the local event, and you are able to just be involved that way. And the conversation that comes from that is as beneficial as the handful of ties that you're going to struggle your way through. The last thing I would say with that, along with getting information and camaraderie, is that you are just part of kind of the forward motion. If there's a conservation issue, you know about it and you're able to participate with it. If there's some sort of other activity or event, you know about it. You're able to participate with other people as you do it. And fly shops and conservation organizations are a great rallying point for things like that to happen. So I would say that would be the next step. Don't necessarily try to do this on your own alone. I'm a big fan of books. Talked about that last week. I'm a big fan of YouTube videos. I'm a big fan of going to kind of one-off events and getting some information from some of the best and brightest in fly fishing, people who are kind of pushing the envelope on technique and strategy and things like that and are really, really good communicators. But, I think that if you can't afford going on a guided trip every month, the next best thing is being around people who are just through osmosis are going to be talking about fly fishing with you. And you're going to get that as you get involved in that local community of fly fishing. All right. So the first thing is get a guide if you are able, if you can. Secondly, get involved in some sort of local fly fishing community, online being a backup if you don't have anything around you. And thirdly, and maybe lastly, so long I'm going to talk about this, just get out on the water. Get out on the water. If you see fly fishing as that thing you do on vacation, it's going to really be hard to feel good about being prepared and your time on the water when you're doing it once or twice a year. I know plenty of people that did that. Back when I sold gear, there were people that would spend astronomical amounts of money for that one trip to Montana that they would go on a year. for that one trip to Alaska, that one trip to the Bahamas. And you talk to them about, you know, what they do, what kind of gear they use throughout the year, and they just don't. And there's a handful of times where they came back dissatisfied with this $500 or $600 rod that they bought because they couldn't cast it well. Well, if you're only going to cast it 1 week out of the year, you're probably not going to cast it well. Getting out on the water in what may subjectively be a less ideal situation is what you need to do to prepare yourself for that mountaintop experience. Furthermore, if you think that your only good fly fishing is going to be happening in the Keys or in Colorado or on some exotic trip to Patagonia, then you're missing out on the full breadth of what fly fishing offers. I got a text from a buddy yesterday who found a pond with pickerel in it. And there, you know, he caught a couple of 16-inch pickerel. And it's exciting because it's right around the corner. It's relatively secluded. And it's going to take some work to get a canoe back in there. And to me, that is exciting. And I think for a lot of us, a lot of fly fishers, that's an exciting opportunity because it's an adventure. Now, is it the same for me as maybe going to the coast and catching striper? Is it the same for me as going up into the Connecticut River system at the Connecticut Lake River system up in northern New Hampshire and catching big, landlocked salmon and big brown trout? It's not the same as that, but it doesn't have to be. It's a kind of a quantitative difference, but it's not a qualitative difference because I'm making the choice to enjoy the experience that's right here. And so just getting out on the water, you know, how often am I going to get out to the coast? You know, probably a couple times a month when it comes to striper season. How often do I get up to northern New Hampshire? Maybe a couple times a season once I'm able to. How often am I able to get out and around the corner here to this pond? You know, if we go and stash a canoe back there, that's something I can, you know, knock out a couple hours here, a couple hours there, a couple times a week by myself, with a friend, with my kids. And the exploration and adventure that comes with an opportunity like that, it's not going to be the kind of thing that blows up Instagram. It's not going to be the kind of thing that I'm going to go back and tell my buddies about. But I also might tell my buddies about the fact that, you know what, I got into a 20-inch pickerel. Or guess what? I caught a bass in there. We didn't think there was a bass in there, but I caught one. That is the kind of thing that really pushes you from one experience to the next. It's finding those small adventures, those small fun things, and through it, you're doing a lot of other stuff. You're learning how to cast better. You are learning how to read water better. You are learning fish behavior. You're learning how the weather impacts how fish feed. You're learning about how a particular water body adapts and changes to the seasonality, as well as to maybe rainfall and things like that. All of those pieces are then going into your database, and they are variables that you can then calculate as you're out on the water. It's amazing about how much of this is kind of done subconsciously. So much of our observation from normal life is done subconsciously. You think about sports, if you've played sports, whether it be baseball or football, there's a lot of things that you start to do by instinct that at one point in time you had to make an observation that, you know, when you see the ball moving in this way, it's going to go to the left or to the right. When you see somebody begin to do this thing with their feet, that means they're going to run this route. And after a while, you're not even thinking about that when you're defending somebody or when you are out in the field watching somebody get ready to hit a ball or hit a ball. The same is true with fly fishing. You get this second, you know, perspective. You get the sixth sense, as it were, about aspects of your fly fishing. You see a little flick in a fish's tail as your fly begins to drift towards it, and you say, this fish is now paying attention to my fly. Whether it strikes or not, I know it's seen it because it has done something different with its body. And those are the kind of things that can really, really be helpful. And those are the kind of things that you can pick up locally. You can pick up as you're fishing for bluegill, and certain aspects of those things are then going to translate when you do have that big trip, whether it be a weekend trip or whether it be a week-long trip, whether it's a few hours away or whether it's across the country. Those are things that you can then incorporate and integrate into your fly fishing. And it creates this continuity. Again, I'm not going to fault somebody who is able to and who wants to, or maybe who has to, only fish one or two times a year and wants to spend all their money on it. It is what it is. But if you're able to maintain that continuity, if you want this to be part of your life, again, there's certainly many more important things, then this is a way that you can do it. This is a way that you can stay involved and stay invested. All right. Well, are there more next steps? Of course. But I would say these are the three that I would immediately recommend somebody to consider. If they say, oh, I have an issue with this, that, and the other thing, I got plenty more things that I could talk about. But hire a guide, get connected with the community, and just get out on the water. Those are the three things that I would absolutely recommend. And the fact of the matter is, if someone is a little bit hesitant, then I would just say reverse that order. Get out on the water, then get connected with the community, then hire a guide. That's perfectly fine too. There's no right or wrong answer. But all three are certainly worth considering. And I would actually say all three can work in triune unity. Trinity is a concept I like. They can all work together to really move you in that direction that you want to move in if you want to continue learning about fly fishing. All right, well, this kind of concludes, again, these initial series of Cast One podcasts. This is something that I do plan on continuing, as I've already mentioned, and I'm happy to hear suggestions for intermediate or even beginner topics. I know there's things I brush by super fast. I could have done multiple podcasts just on the beginning aspects of figuring out what fly rod you need for what situation. I could have done multiple podcasts on how to find bass in water. We talked about how to find trout, could have talked about how to find bass. So there's plenty of things. So stay tuned to the end of the podcast. And I have something in my recommendation segment that would address some of these Cast One further concerns. This week on the podcast, Monday's article was called Cracked, Opening a Book, Tearing Down Dams. So sometime last year, I received a book to review called Cracked, and I got through it, and I had some thoughts. So usually, I'm very, very rosy on stuff on Casting Across. So if you say, hey, you're always really positive about things. I have some positive things to say about Cracked, but I also have a few criticisms. And so check that out over at castingacross.com. Wednesday's article was called More Fly Rod FAQs. More Fly Rod FAQs. So it's been a few months, but I started a new page on Casting Across that called Fly Rod FAQs. And from selling fly rods, both for a big company and independently for a small company, through teaching casting instruction, through guiding, and through casting across, one of the most requested pieces of information has to do with particulars for fly rod selection. And so, although I've addressed a lot of fly rod information on the podcast and the website in kind of long form articles, I thought I would start to catalog some of the most frequently asked questions on a page on Casting Across. So that total is up to 10. There are 5 new ones. There are, dozens more I have in the queue, but I want to spread them out and don't just inundate the internet with them right away. So you can check out both that new article and the page where they're going to be cataloged over at castingacross.com. And at the bottom of that article and at the bottom of that page, there's a contact form, and you can ask your fly rod question or any other question, which leads me to this week's recommendation on Casting Across. It is, if you have a question, if you have a comment, if you have an accusation, let me know. If you've been listening for 279 episodes, or you are just finding us through this Cast One series, every 10 episodes, I do what's called the Fly Fishing Accusations podcast. And it basically is just your questions and your feedback, and I interact with it on that podcast. So if you've emailed me, I've probably gotten back to you individually, as long as you're not like somebody in some very, very faraway place trying to sell me like nippers or fly tying materials. And it's a very, very sketchy website. I usually don't respond to those. But everybody who seems legit, I do respond to. At least I try to. But if you have a topic for another Cast One podcast, if you have a question for fly rods, then either shoot me an email, matthew@castingacross.com, use that contact form that's on the website and at the bottom of a number of articles, and I will more than likely get back to you very, very quickly, and I may very well introduce that question at an upcoming podcast. So thanks for listening. Thanks for giving your feedback. And I look forward to hearing from more folks who have been benefiting from this Cast One series. Thanks for listening to the Casting Across Flagship Podcast. Please subscribe to your favorite podcast app and rate the podcast in iTunes. Then head over to castingacross.com for 3 posts a week on the people, places, and things that go into the pursuit of fish.